We're in the book of Jonah, the power of one. One of the enduring symbols of wanting to be rescued is sending a message in a bottle. You know, you're stranded on a desert island, you put a message in a bottle, you throw it in the ocean hoping somebody is going to find it and come and rescue you. So if your life depends on a message in a bottle, you'd kind of want to know how well that system works, wouldn't you? So let's give one example. March 21st, 2008, Merle Brandell, a 34-year-old hunting guide from the tiny Alaskan village of Nelson Lagoon, was walking his hunting dog along the beach, like he did almost every day. And he saw a 2-liter plastic soda bottle on the beach that hadn't been there the day before, so he went to pick it up as litter. And he saw there was something inside. He took out his hunting knife and cut it open and found a message that said, "To whoever finds this, this is a class science project. We are studying the effect of ocean currents in the lives of people who live in distant lands." And it was signed by fourth grader Emily Juan. Now, the note indicated that Emily attended a grade school in Seattle, Washington, and the date that she was putting this bottle in the water was 1987. 1987 to 2008, that's 21 years, to go 1,700 miles. Well, Merle got pretty excited about this, so he got online and he actually tracked down Emily Huang, who by now was a 40-year-old accountant and had no memory of ever putting a message in a bottle. So 21 years is a long time to wait for being rescued, don't you think? Especially when you stop and realize that at a normal hiking rate, you could have hiked that 1,700 miles in about 4 months, not 21 years. So how well does this message in the bottle thing work? Well, the truth is, in all of recorded history, there is not a single example of anyone ever being rescued by a message in a bottle. Not one. So when God wanted to rescue people, he had a better plan. He decided to send his people to rescue people. 2,700 years ago, he sent one of his people, a man named Jonah, to a city named Nineveh to warn them against coming judgment for their sin. Jonah didn't want to do it. And God had to send a giant storm and then a giant fish to get Jonah back on mission. So we've been looking at the story of Jonah and trying to learn lessons we can learn about our mission to people who need Jesus. Let's pick up the story today. Our lesson comes from Jonah chapter 3 and chapter 4. Then the Lord spoke to Jonah and said, "Get up and go to the great city of Nineveh and deliver the message of judgment I have given you." This time Jonah obeyed the Lord's command and went to Nineveh, a city so large that it took 3 days to see it all. And on the day Jonah entered the city, he shouted to the crowds, 40 days from now, Nineveh will be destroyed." The people of Nineveh believed God's message, and from the greatest to the least, they decided to go without food and wear sackcloth to show their sorrow. The king and his nobles sent this decree: "Everyone is required to wear sackcloth and to pray earnestly to God. Everyone must turn from their evil ways and stop all their violence. Who can tell? Perhaps even yet God will have pity on us and will hold back his fierce anger from destroying us." And when God saw that they had put a stop to their evil ways, he had mercy on them and didn't carry out the destruction he had threatened. Well, this change of plans upset Jonah, and he became very angry. So he complained to the Lord about it. "Didn't I say before I left home that you would do this, Lord? I mean, this is why I ran away to Tarshish. I knew that you were a gracious and compassionate God, slow to get angry and filled with unfailing love. I knew how easily you could cancel your plans for destroying these people. Just kill me now, Lord. I'd rather be dead than alive, because nothing I predicted is going to happen." The Lord replied, "Is it right for you to be angry about this? Then Jonah went out to the east side of the city and made a shelter to sit under as he waited to see if anything would happen to the city. And the Lord arranged for a leafy plant to grow there. Soon it spread its broad leaves over Jonah's head, shading him from the sun. Now this eased some of his discomfort, and Jonah was very grateful for the plant. But God also prepared a worm. And the next morning at dawn, the worm ate through the stem of the plant, so it soon died and withered away. And as the sun grew hot, God sent a scorching east wind to blow on Jonah. The sun beat down on his head until he grew faint and wished to die. "Death is certainly better than this," he exclaimed. Then God said to Jonah, "Is it right for you to be angry because the plant died?" And Jonah retorted, "Even angry enough to die." Then the Lord said, "You feel sorry about the plant, although you did nothing to put it there. And the plant is only, at best, short-lived. But Nineveh has more than 120,000 people living in spiritual darkness, not to mention all the animals. Shouldn't you feel sorry for such a great city?" Jonah was the greatest spokesperson for God to his generation. And yet at the peak of his popularity and ministry impact in Israel, God sent Jonah to a distant land on a difficult and dangerous mission. God loved the people in Nineveh so much, he reassigned his best spokesperson. That's how much God cares about lost people. And that was Jonah's mission. A rescue mission to the lost people of Nineveh, and that is our mission, a rescue mission to the people that God has put in our life. And our mission as a church behind me is to touch and transform our communities by the power of Jesus Christ through lives of full devotion. And we've kind of condensed that into our goal for 2019, each one reach one, each one teach one. What can we learn from Jonah about how to pursue our mission and what problems we can avoid? Well, the first point today is our mission is personal. Our rescue mission is personal. As God said to Jonah, "Get up and go to the great city of Nineveh," and Jonah entered the city. Jonah had to enter the city. God wasn't going to let Jonah sit back and write letters to the people of Nineveh. God wasn't going to let Jonah just send money to missionaries to reach the people in Nineveh. It was a personal mission. Jonah had to go there himself. He had to go to the city and go into the city to talk to the people in the city. Now, in Jonah's day, that required a caravan trip. Jonah would have had to ride a donkey about 550 miles behind enemy lines, into enemy territory, into what is Iraq today. It was going to be a long, arduous, dangerous mission. Jonah didn't want to do it, but he had to do it because his mission was personal. Jonah couldn't just stand outside the city walls of Nineveh and call and say, "Hey, if you want to find out about the one true God, come on and meet me outside the city. Meet me where I am. Speak my language. Visit my church. Do things my way. And then maybe you'll learn about God." Because he had to go into the city. He had to enter the city. He had to enter the lives of the people and have conversations with them. And that was Jonah's mission, and that's our mission, because his mission was personal, our mission is personal, because God's mission is always person to person. It's relational. It's always one person to another person. God sent his son Jesus on a personal mission, and he sends us, his sons and daughters, on a personal mission. So the people in our lives, in our communities, can see something of his love and hear something of his truth through our words and through our actions. See, our mission field is the relationships that we already have, because the mission is personal. Our mission is to be personally befriending people who need to know Jesus. Our mission is personally to be praying for people that need to know Jesus. Our mission is personally to be looking for opportunities to show them the love for Jesus in practical ways by doing things that give care to them. Our mission is to be looking for opportunities to share a little bit of what God has done in our life to them. Call it witnessing. And our mission is to invite them to things that can help them along in their spiritual journey. Here at Elgin, we call that the four behaviors of prayer, care, share, and invite. And we are intentionally, deliberately trying to learn to practice and grow in those behaviors together, because the mission is personal. It's relational. Sometimes somebody will say, well, you know, what this church needs is a better evangelism program. We need a new program for evangelism and outreach. But the bottom line is, our mission isn't about programs, because programs don't rescue people. People rescue people. Programs have a valuable and they have a place, but programs don't rescue people. People rescue people. Go to the New Testament church. They didn't have any programs. They didn't have any budgets. They didn't have a building. And they grew by thousands at a time. Why? Because they were so in love with the Lord, the love of the Lord overflowed their lives, and they couldn't help touching other people with His love and telling other people about His love. You see, we don't need another program, because you, each one of you individually, is God's program. All we've got to do is love the Lord enough to let the love overflow our lives and touch the lives of the people around us. Jesus one day said, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. Follow Jesus, and you will be a fisher. Followers are fishers. And that means if you are not fishing, you're really not following Jesus very closely, are you? It's personal. Our rescue mission is relational. So the first question to ask ourselves this morning is, am I fishing? Where am I fishing? Who am I fishing for, and how well am I fishing? Because if I'm following Jesus, I'm fishing. It's relational. Now, about 50 or 60 of you have been involved at 9 o'clock. We've had a class at the other end of the building called Go Fish. And the people I've talked to are really enjoying it. So much so that when that class ends in a few weeks, we're going to follow it up with another class, the title of which is Tell Someone. It's another class on how to help us deal with our fears and just naturally and simply be able to share little pieces of God's story in our life without fear and without pressure. So I hope even if you're not involved with Go Fish now, you'll think of jumping in a few weeks, you'll know when the class starts, into the class for Tell Someone at 9 o'clock. As Andy Stanley said in the class this morning, this is simple. God made it simple because we need it simple. Stop making it complicated and complex. Our first point was our mission is personal. The second point is our message is both huge and urgent. Our message is both huge and urgent. Chapter 3, verse 3, Nineveh is a city so large it took 3 days to see it all. Now, the city of Nineveh, where Jonah was sent, was huge. Now, here's a picture of the city walls in Nineveh. They've been excavated, large parts of them have been excavated, and this part, at least, has been rebuilt. These city walls were 50 feet tall. That means that's like over a 6-story building tall. The next slide is a map of the city walls around Nineveh. And the city walls were 8 miles long. And inside the city walls was about 120,000 people. But archaeologists tell us the bulk of people lived outside the city walls in the suburbs. Like even today, the bulk of people don't live in Elgin, they live in the suburbs of Elgin, right? And to travel around to do the circumference outside the city of Nineveh was about 60-mile walk. That's how big it was. And archaeologists tell us that would have had 500,000 to 1 million people in the greater Nineveh area. Are you getting an idea of how huge Jonah's mission was? Not one of those 500,000 to 1 million people had any knowledge of the one true God of the universe. His mission was huge. Our mission is huge. It's estimated in the world today there's 4.5 billion people who don't even claim to have a relationship with Jesus Christ, okay? Now, I'm not trying to sort if somebody's really a Christian or not a Christian. I'm saying people that don't even claim to have a relationship. 4.5 billion people, and that increases by 60 million people every year because the world's population is getting bigger. We need to reach 60 million more people every year just to keep pace with growth. And I read this week that every time you and I take one breath, 4 people pass into a Christless eternity with every breath that we take. The mission is so big it can be daunting, and that's why here at Elgin E Free, we believe so strongly in supporting international missions. And a large part of our budget gets sent to missionaries all over the world to help in this task. And then the second Sunday of every month, we do another collection to help in this task as well. So thank you for your part and your contribution, which helps us promote this mission all around the world. But what about at home? What about local missions? There's 4.5 million people in Kane County and Cook County, because I know Elgin kind of covers both. 4.5 million people that don't claim to have any relationship with Jesus Christ. But if that number is still too big, let's just look at our ministry radius, okay? Draw a circle around our church. It's about a 15-minute drive. And you've got 150,000 people that don't claim to know anything or have any relationship with Jesus Christ. And that is our local mission field, that 150,000 people. Those are the communities that we're trying to touch and transform, the communities where you work, where you live, where you go to school, where you shop, where you go to work out. Our goal is to touch and transform their lives through the power of Jesus Christ, through lives of full devotion. The task is huge. But more than just the task is huge, the message is urgent. Our message is urgent because Jonah's message was 40 days from now, Nineveh will be destroyed. 40 days. A clock was ticking down to the moment after which the people of Nineveh could not avoid punishment for their sins. There was no time to lose. The message was urgent. And nothing has changed because our message is urgent too. Every person in your communities, every relationship in your life, there is a clock ticking down to the moment when they will breathe their last, and the moment after that will be too late to escape eternal judgment. The message is urgent. This next slide is a picture of David Freeman and the cover of his book. He wrote a book, 100 Things to Do Before You Die. And in it, he identified 100 travel destinations, where to go and what to experience to live a rich, full, satisfying life, cross everything off your bucket list before you die. In September 21st of 2008, David Freeman was working around his house when he fell and hit his head. And a few days later, he died. He was 47 years old. He had only done half the things in the book that he wrote. You see, because a clock was ticking. Beatle George Harrison, more than once during interviews, he would say, "Everything in life can wait, but for the search for God cannot wait." And he was right. His clock was ticking and he died at 58 years old from cancer. The message is urgent because a clock is ticking in everyone's life. Our job is to warn them. Everything else in life can wait, but the search for God can't wait. And to people who respond to that, then we explain to them how they can find the God who loves them and died to them. That's our job, just to encourage people like George Harrison, encourage them in their search for God. I had a seminary professor named Carl Henry, and he was one of the great theologians of our day. And he said, the gospel is only good news if it arrives on time. You see, a rescue is not a rescue if it arrives too late. A rescue that arrives too late is a tragedy. Our mission is huge and our message is urgent. And that's why Jesus said one day from John chapter 9, verse 4, Jesus said, all of us must quickly carry out the tasks assigned us by the one who sent me, because there is little time left before the night falls and all work comes to an end. All of us must quickly carry out the tasks assigned us. So let me ask you, what difference would it make in your life if you believed Jesus' words? What difference would it make in your life if you believed Jesus' words enough to live those words? Believing that a clock is ticking. Are you living as if our task is huge and our message is urgent? Well, our mission is personal, it's huge, it's urgent. If we believe that Jesus said, I'm going to come again, we'll see he finds us fighting, scorning death, disease, and pain. If we believe that Jesus said, I'm going to judge the world, we'll certainly see that his banner of love is everywhere unfurled. If we believe that Jesus said, you are the dark world's light, we will live in the darkest places to make them sweet and light. Our mission is personal, it's huge, it's urgent. Third, our obstacle is ourselves. Our obstacle is ourselves. After telling his message to the people of Nineveh, Jonah went outside the city to a shelter where he sat in the shade and had a pity party. He wasn't happy. You see, the Ninevites were the enemies of the Israelites. He didn't really want them saved. He wanted them destroyed. But even worse, he had predicted that in 40 days they would be destroyed. Now they're repenting. They're not going to be destroyed. That means his prediction doesn't come true. Now, if you're a prophet, your whole career depends on your predictions coming true. Right? So Jonah is angry. Jonah is sulking. Jonah is the obstacle to his own mission. And sometimes, unfortunately, you and I are the obstacles to our own mission. When we care about more about our wants and needs than we care about the wants and needs of lost people. When we fail to live as if there is a clock that's ticking down, we can be the obstacles to our own mission like Jonah did. So let's learn from Jonah. Let's learn from what Jonah did wrong by asking ourselves five questions to make sure we're not the obstacles to our own mission. First question in your checklist. Do I doubt God's power? This is your missional checklist. Do I doubt God's power? I often hear Christians say something like, Dick, you don't know the people in my life. You don't know my friends. They don't care about having spiritual conversations. They're not interested in God's stuff. Well, my experience is we often underestimate how much people around us are looking for spiritual answers in their life. So this last week, I was delighted when I read a new release, a brand new release from Barna Research Group this last week titled Reviving Evangelism. Now listen to what they found. 60%, over 60% of non-Christians and lapsed Christians say they would be open to talking about faith matters with someone who listens without judgment, the top quality that they value. But only 1/3 or 34% of them see this trait in the Christians they know. Let's keep going. The next slide. 50% are open to faith discussions with Christians who do not force the conclusions. And 30% are open to faith discussion with Christians who demonstrate interest in other people's stories and are good at asking questions. Do you get the point here? The most extensive research out there shows that 50 to 60% of the people around you are interested in having spiritual conversations when we get better at how we do it. When we do it without judgment. When we do it by asking questions and by listening and showing interest in their story before we tell our story. And that when we do tell our story, we're not forcing anything. We're just sharing our story. As Andy Stanley says, live it out and lay it out. You know? It's just a matter of knowing at the right time to say, wow, let me tell you something cool that Jesus did in my life this last week. And saying it in 3, 4, 5 sentences. And then just be quiet. And if they are interested, they'll pick it up and they'll turn it into a conversation and you're off and running. And if they're not interested, they'll kind of say that's nice and change the topic. And that's okay too. It's a matter of sharing it clearly and briefly and attractively and not forcing anything, but showing that you're interested in them and interested in their story. You're not there to judge them. You see, the problem is we're not here to argue anybody into the kingdom of God. Can I repeat that? We are not here to argue anybody into the kingdom of God. Our job is just to give them a glimpse of the glory and the greatness and the goodness and the love and the forgiveness of God, to give them a glimpse of a God that is so beautiful that they get hungry to have a taste for that God themselves. A glimpse of a God that is, a taste of God that is so wonderful, they want to keep drinking. Tell me more. Let me know more about that God. But the work is God's. We don't do the work. We just give them a glimpse. We give them a taste, and then God does the work. Okay. I know. I repeatedly tell you that I grew up on a Vermont dairy farm, and you're probably sick of that. Thank you. But we would periodically have visitors come that were either relatives or old friends down from the city. You know, city slickers, flatlanders we called them. And sometimes we would play a prank on them. Take them down to the barn, and we'd be working around on the barn and say, hey, you could help me. Would you move that calf into that pen? Sure, anything. You know, a calf's this little thing. Ah, great, I'll love to do that. Well, they would push, they would pull. You can't move a calf that doesn't want to be moved. They just dig in, and you can't move them. And we'd wait till they kind of got fed up. And then we'd stick our finger in a bucket of milk, walk over, let the calf suck our finger, and just slowly walk into the pen while the calf was sucking our finger. And now, do you have that picture? Because that's what we're supposed to do. That's all we're supposed to do as Christians. We're supposed to be overflowing with the love and the goodness of the Lord in such a way that they get a taste of it through our words and our actions, and they so like the taste that they just want to know more, and they just want to drink more. And God does that work. God does the work of drawing them. Our job is just to give them a taste. Does that make sense to you? Okay. Our point is sometimes we can doubt God's power. You know that person in your life that you don't witness to because you say, oh, they will never believe. They don't care. They would never believe. Well, that's actually what the reputation of Nineveh was. I mean, the smart money was that the people of Nineveh were so wicked they would never repent. They would never turn to God. And yet we read in chapter 3, verse 5, the people of Nineveh believed God's message from the greatest to the least. That's God's power at work, from the greatest to the least. It's not our work. We just give people a glimpse and a taste because we are so filled with God's love and God's forgiveness and God's grace. They get the taste. God does the work. Do you believe that power? Do you believe that power enough to believe that God is working in you and through you even when you can't see the results? And you have been praying and doing the prayer, and you have been doing the care, and you have been doing the share, and you have been doing the invite, and you're not seeing any results. Can you believe that God is at work even when you don't see the results? How many here have ever watched any one of the bazillion different varieties of CSI on TV?
I like it.
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't, you've kind of been dead, I think. CSA, Crime Scene Investigation. So, every show, how do they track down the criminal? It's something microscopic. I mean, it's a hair, it's a fiber, it's a dust, it's a tire print. It's something tiny and microscopic. But there's one principle behind the success of all the CSI shows, and that principle is every contact leaves a trace. Right? Every contact leaves a trace. And the same is true spiritually. Every contact leaves a trace. And when you pray for someone and tell them that you are praying for them, it leaves a trace. And when you do acts of compassion to them in Jesus' name, it leaves a trace. And when you share just a little story of what God has done for you recently, it leaves a trace. And when you invite them to do something with you that could help them in their spiritual journey, it leaves a trace. And God takes all of those traces, and he can use it to draw people to himself. Because it's his work, not our work. It's his power, not our power. Do you believe God's power? Are you willing to trust it? Because if you are, then you won't keep score about how well you're doing, because it's not about you and it's not about measuring results. Do you believe God's power can work through you? You see, God worked to prepare Jonah for his mission. God worked to prepare the message for Jonah. And God worked to prepare the hearts of the people in Nineveh. You say, Dick, how do you know that? Well, this is pretty cool. So just follow along here with me, okay? In the Middle East, in those days, they worshipped lots of gods and goddesses, as we have discussed. But one of the major gods was called Dagon, the fish god. And he was particularly worshipped in Nineveh. Both of those images come from ruins of ancient Nineveh. And Dagon was sometimes represented as half man, half fish, or as a man wearing a fish. But because of the large number of images of Dagon in the palaces and the temples of Nineveh, the archaeologists assume it was kind of like the center of the worship of the fish god. Are you starting to figure out what's going on here? Okay, let's back up. God orchestrates for a large fish to swallow Jonah, then the large fish to barf him back up onto shore, probably in front of other people who can watch and see what's happening here. A man just came alive out of a fish, to then go to Nineveh, the capital of fish worship, to say, I serve the God who controls the fish. Do you get it now? How cool is this? You wonder, why did the people of Nineveh repent so fast? It would seem that God was working and he was preparing Jonah, he was preparing the message, and he was preparing the people of Nineveh. And God can do the same in your life. Will you believe in God's power so you take steps to pursue your mission and do your prayer, your care, your share, and your invite? Without having to worry about the consequences, because you believe that God is at work and he can use every trace of what you do and use to draw people to himself. If you're really not actively pursuing your mission to touch the lives of lost people, ask yourself, how am I not trusting God and trusting God's power? Okay, we're looking at the obstacles when we become the obstacle. The second question is, am I resisting change? Am I resisting change? You read in chapter 4, verse 1, this change of plans upset Jonah and he became very angry. Jonah didn't like change, and most of the time neither do we. We have an idea of what we want church to be like. This is the way good church should look and feel. And this is our plans of what the church should do. And when God's plans aren't our plans, when what is effective in pursuing our mission isn't the way we want church to look and feel, we get upset and we get mopey and we complain and we even get angry at our church leaders and we get angry at God. You see, when churches start, they start as a missionary effort. You know, somebody said, how are we going to reach the town and the area of Elgin with the message of Jesus Christ? And they tried stuff, and if it didn't work, they tried something else, and they kept trying and failing and experimenting until they found something that worked. Then they said, okay, this is the way we'll do it, and that became their method. And they stuck to that method, even as the culture around them and the culture of Elgin was changing and changing. They kept doing the method the way they had always done it because it felt comfortable. And the longer we as a church stick to our method and the culture is changing, the gap between the church and the culture gets bigger and bigger until we're only talking to ourselves. So what's the answer? It's to think like missionaries again. How can we present the good news of Jesus Christ in the language of the people can understand, in the cultural context that can connect with them? Because that's what missionaries do, right? How can I meet them in their culture with their language with the good news of Jesus Christ? Martin Luther, responsible for at least part of the Reformation, translated parts of the Bible into everyday language for the people so that they could read it. And he went into the taverns and took barroom tunes and he put Christian words to them, and we call them hymns. Okay? Why? Because he was thinking like a missionary. How to get this rescue mission, we've got to connect with people in their language and in their culture, and that is our job today. We are called to be missionaries, to speak to the people around us in their language, in their cultural context. God's truth is unchanging, but people can't understand that truth if it's not spoken in their language and if it's not presented to them in a cultural context within which they can understand it. And when the church stops changing, because this is the way we like church, the church stops being a missional church and it starts having its impact because it's no longer on a rescue mission. We exist for us rather than for serving our mission of Jesus Christ. So, when the new guy gets here, what if he brings new ideas, new methods, new ways of doing things that he thinks can make us more effective in touching and transforming our communities by the power of Jesus Christ through lives of full devotion? Will you resist change, or will you say, it's not about what I like or don't like, it's about what will help us fulfill our mission? And will you embrace change? Do I doubt God's power? Am I resisting change? The third question to determine if you're an obstacle to your own mission is, am I clinging to comfort? Am I clinging to comfort? The Lord God arranged for a leafy plant to grow, shading him from the sun, and Jonah was very grateful for the plant. But God also prepared for a worm, and then God said to Jonah, is it right for you to be angry because the plant died? God grew a plant to shade Jonah. And Jonah sat under the shade. He enjoyed the shade. He was enjoying the comfort that God gave him. He's enjoying his comfort. And he's not at all concerned or caring about bringing the message of the comfort and salvation, forgiveness and love of God to the people of Nineveh. You see, Jonah is more concerned with his comfort than he is the comfort, the spiritual comfort of the people that need Jesus. So God turns up the heat. And he sends a worm to kill the plant that was shading Jonah. And he sends a heat wave so bad that Jonah almost wants to die. Now, Jonah wasn't just being a wuss here, okay? Remember, this happened in what we now call Mosul, Iraq, where the temperatures at certain times are 110 degrees. And then the Bible clearly says he sent an east wind. The hot, dry wind out of the east is called a sirocco, and that can raise the temperature to 120 and 130 degrees. So picture Jonah. He's sitting exposed, no shade, no protection, 130 degrees. The wind is sandblasting him. He can't open his eyes because the liquid is dried out too much. His lips are so parched, they're glued closed. His skin is scorched. His body is dehydrated. This is heat prostration. He's going in and out of consciousness. Has anybody here ever experienced that? I have. I went on a bike ride and didn't realize that the temperature was going up to 95 degrees, and I was too far from home heading up a hill. And I started to red out. I got off the bike and laid down and, you know, went unconscious from heat prostration. Jonah's not being a wuss here. This is a critical situation. Why did God do this to Jonah? So that Jonah would forget about his own comfort and discomfort and do whatever it took to help the people of Nineveh escape the heat of God's judgment. That's how strongly God feels about us and our rescue mission. He will turn up the heat and make us uncomfortable like he did Jonah until we care enough about our rescue mission. So what is it in your life today that you know God has been trying to nudge you out of your comfort zone and asking you to speak to someone or do something? Or maybe it's just practice, you know, prayer, care, share, and invite. Or maybe it's come out to 9 o'clock. What is it God is pushing you outside your comfort zone and you have been resisting? Are you going to obey, or is God going to have to turn up the heat on you? Is God going to have to turn up the heat on our church to get us to be serious about the mission? Am I clinging to my comfort? The next question to determine if you're the obstacle to our mission is, do I lack God's compassion? Do I lack God's compassion? God said, you feel sorry about the plant, but Nineveh has more than 120,000 people living in spiritual darkness. Shouldn't I feel sorry for such a great city? God said, Jonah, you've lost your perspective. You're more concerned about little things than big things. You're more concerned about material things than spiritual things. You're more concerned about you than you are about them. Now, we're not going to stay on this point because we bumped into it several times on this study, haven't we? I just want to challenge you. Your measure of maturity as a Christian is not how well you know the Bible. Because Jesus said the number one commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your mind, heart, and soul, and love what? Love your neighbor as yourself. And that means if you don't love that neighbor who needs Jesus as much as you love yourself, if you don't love them enough to give up your preferences and your comfort and your conveniences and your desires for the sake of reaching them, maybe you still got some ways to go on that spiritual maturity thing. Our calling is one of our core values, actually. Our calling is to love people as much as Jesus does and sacrifice anything for them the way that Jesus did. I love that core value. Love them as much as Jesus does, and if you do, you'll sacrifice anything for them the way that Jesus did. So what are you doing in your life today to help God grow a bigger heart of compassion for people that need him? Our final question, have I forgotten my calling? Do I doubt God's power? Am I resisting change? Am I clinging to comfort? Do I lack God's compassion? Have I forgotten my calling? Jonah forgot that the whole purpose of the nation of Israel was to share the light of God's salvation with the nations. That was the whole reason for the nation of Israel. Their whole purpose in existing, their whole reason for existence, was to share light of God's salvation to the nations. And as a prophet of Israel, that was Jonah's job, and he forgot his calling. Now in Acts chapter 13, verse 46, the Apostle Paul takes God's mission to Israel and says it's the same mission for the church. Listen to this, Acts 13:46. Paul writes, "For this is what the Lord has commanded us," and then he quotes from Isaiah chapter 49, verse 6. "I have made you a light for the Gentiles, that you might bring salvation to the ends of the earth." Paul was saying God's mission for Israel, God's mission for Jonah, is the same as your mission and my mission. It's to bring the light of God's salvation to the world. Now, where did Paul get that? Well, he got it from Jesus. We call it the Great Commission, don't we? So we've forgotten our mission. Now, sometimes people will say, "Dick, our mission is to glorify God." That's absolutely true. The mission of the church is to glorify God. But let me ask you, how do you glorify God? You do it by doing what He asked you to do. And what He asked us to do was share the good news with others. He said, that's why you're here. That's why the church, to share the good. This is how you glorify me, by sharing the good news and expanding my family. And when we are not effectively pursuing the Great Commission, when we are not effectively touching and transforming our communities by the power of Jesus Christ through lives of full devotion, we've forgotten our calling, we've forgotten our mission, just like Jonah. We've gotten sidetracked. So, would the Lord say that you are on mission, or would the Lord say you're kind of avoiding it? You're kind of ignoring it. Our final point. We said our mission is personal, it's huge, it's urgent. Our obstacle is ourselves, but now point four, our reward is changed lives. The people of Nineveh believed God's message. When God saw that they had put a stop to their evil ways, He had mercy on them and didn't carry out the destruction. The people believed, they stopped their evil ways, they turned to God, they were rescued and their lives were changed. And guess what? It wasn't by Jonah's great preaching. It wasn't. Read the book. He kind of went through, yeah, in 40 days you're going to be restored. 40 days you're going to be destroyed. 40 days you're going to be destroyed. His heart wasn't in it, gang. It wasn't about Jonah's preaching. It was about God's power at work in us and through us in spite of ourselves. All Jonah had to do was show up. And that's all God is asking us to do, is show up. Show up. And pray for the people I've put in your lives. Are you praying for five people five times a day for 5 weeks that they would come to know the Lord? Just show up and look for opportunities to show them the love of the Lord by showing care for them in practical ways. Have you been able to do that five times a week since we started? Show up and look for opportunities to share something that Jesus has done in your life. You know, I usually lose my temper and I controlled it the other day, or I lost it, but I went back and apologized to the person. You know, I prayed and God answered it. Just the little things that you're sharing with them that can create room for dialogue. And are you actively considering what you can invite other people to? Maybe it's to watch Christian video with you. Maybe it's invite them to read a Christian book with you. Maybe it's just invite them over to dinner at your house with some of your friends, and there's some believers and non-believers mingling together to see what God will do. Are you living the prayer, care, share, and invite? Are you showing up? Because God can use it to transform lives. Because a church that's practicing those, a church like that, God can use a church like that to do miracles. God can use a church like that to change the face of a city like Elgin. Through one man, Jonah, the power of one, the entire city of Nineveh turned to God. And God can use one person, one church like Elgin E-Free to impact a city like Elgin, which is a whole lot smaller and a whole lot less wicked than Nineveh was, by His power and for His name. That is our calling. That is our mission. That is our opportunity. And you know what? That's why God is bringing your next pastor to you. He is bringing this next pastor to you to lead you into a whole new era of effectiveness in reaching your community, in touching and transforming your community by the power of Jesus Christ through lives of full devotion. Are you on board? Let's do this together. Will you bow with me in prayer? Lord, forgive us for the times that we, like Jonah, have ignored the mission, avoided the mission, given excuses instead of pursuing the mission, when we've embraced our comfort or convenience, when we have resisted change. Lord, when we said, we're too busy, let somebody else do it, I don't have the time. Teach us just to be there, to show up in our relationships, to give people a taste of your love and your goodness, so that they would want to taste more and drink more. Teach us to trust that your power is at work and every touch we have leaves a trace that you can use for good. We ask it in your name. Amen.